kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Weekend show. No, fuck me. It's not a weekend show. It's a Wednesday show. Why do I keep calling these Wednesday shows the weekend shows? Pernell, what is up with me?
Because everybody's working for the weekend.
Everybody's working. Seriously, it's been so long since I've been doing these, since I record on the weekend and release on a Monday, and now I record on a Tuesday and release on a Wednesday. I still call them weekend shows. What is my problem?
Because you missed the weekend.
Oh man, I do. It's a Wednesday show. Pernell's here.
That's true. See, you don't miss me because I'm back in pog form. I'm not going long enough to be missed. I'm just around.
Alf is back in pog form.
One of the best Simpsons lines ever. It will never die, even when the show eventually goes off.
In pog form. Fucking pogs. Do you remember pogs?
That's actually the line from the episode, so there you go. Well, I guess it was more like remember Alf, but still. Pogs, remember, and his Alf Pogs, remember Alf? Yes, I do remember Pogs. They were such a dumb idea, and yet at the same time, we really laid down a lot of kids' toys are like that. It's just somebody was like, you know how we can market this, it'll work, because kids just want something to do. Like, I remember when Beyblades first came, which is a later toy. This isn't when I was a kid, of course, but still, I worked at a toy store at the time. So Beyblade comes out, and you know they had the Japanese kids on the covers, and the tops had animals associated with them. Like, this is the raging tiger Beyblade, and then people were all like, you know, kids were coming like, we got this Beyblade with the dragon on it. And I'm like, sure, and grabbing it, like, what the hell is a Beyblade? What that looks like? It's a fucking top. It is literally a top that has stats. why is this cool? Though I'll admit, one thing I liked about it was that you could kind of customize the top, which was good for like determining how long it could spin or whatever. But they were claiming all kinds of, like, you know, how heavy it is, so determines how hard it hits other tops. But I'm sorry, no, other Beyblades in a Beyblade battle. And you get arena, which was just a bowl. It was literally a bowl that they sold. And it was insane. It was the simplest concept, but they put some Japanese kids and animals on it, and it became a phenomenon. It made no sense. And then, of course, you had miniature cars that weren't meant to be played with, as opposed to Hot Wheels, which were meant to be played with, or tech decks, where you did skateboard tricks with your fingers.
I remember those.
I hated tech deck. I at least understood Hot Wheels. You could push Hot Wheels around, like, vroom, vroom, and eventually started giving you get the car, you get the launcher attached, you could launch it down like tracks and stuff. Tech deck was literally just a miniature skateboard, which I would get if you just bought them because you liked decks and you wanted to collect the image on them. Like, say, hey, look at all these cool like images that I could get on skateboards that are miniature because I can't afford or have the space for full-size skateboards. But then the commercial was like, look at me do this 1080 bendy. And it's like, he's using his fingers and his thumb. Like, this is not impressive. This is depressing, and you need assistance, child. Let's get you a real skateboard and some real skin knees. Let's get you out there. But I don't know.
I'm getting distracted because after mentioning Pogs, I looked up. I remembered that they had Earthbound Pogs from the Nintendo Power Catalog. Wait, back in the mid-90s. I tried ordering them, and when I sent in my tokens and my money order and whatever else, they were sold out. So I missed out on Earthbound Pogs.
I didn't even know they had Pogs. Earthbound Pogs.
Yes.
I remember the Super Power Club cards, which I actually still have. I remember the strategy guide that came up with the Scratch and Stink.
Yeah.
In fact, I do reflect. Like, I remember there were some Punch-Out Pogs that came with some of the issues, but I threw those all in the trash. But I didn't remember there being Earthbound Pogs.
Yeah, there were a set of 8 Pogs, and there is a guy on eBay selling Earthbound, Mother 2, Mother 1 and 2 on Game Boy, Mother 3 on Game Boy, Mother on the NES, custom Earthbound boxes,
Mother on the Run.
It's insane the amount of stuff this guy has, but he has the Earthbound Pogs as well as some amiibo, a Super Nintendo, bundle set that has Earthbound mentioned on it. He has the pizza scratch and sniff air freshener. Remember how there was a mystery scent in the scratch and sniff cards in the strategy guide?
Yeah.
The mystery one, if you sent away and you answered and you guessed correctly what it was, which it was pizza scented, you got a, what the hell's the pizza delivery guy in Earthbound?
Wait, mock pizza?
Mock pizza. Yeah, there's an air freshener.
Oh my God, I would have loved to have gotten that. I didn't even try to guess it. Now I'm pissed.
But this guy is selling all of this stuff for $4,000.
Any bids or is it only buy it now?
It's a buy it now.
No one's paying $4,000 for that.
If I had $4,000, I would buy the shit out of this.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You'd have to have $4,000. And to be blunt, I'm picturing a person having $4,000, not having time to think about Earthbound. That's just me. Like, I'm that guy, and I wish, and I'm sitting there thinking, like, what would I have to be doing to have just $4,000 that I could spend on an Earthbound auction? Like, what would I have to be doing to have that money? And my thought is, I would not have time to be thinking about Earthbound. Though, correction, I do have one friend who totally does, but at that point, he doesn't think, he probably wouldn't. He's actually playing Earthbound right now, but he himself is like, doesn't think about collectibles and stuff anymore. So he'd be like, eh. But I just can't picture the person with that money being like, I got to get these pogs. Yeah, give me them pogs. Mark, piece of man. That's for us, sir. That's for our minds, I think, which is why I got to lower his price.
Man, I'm just looking at this guy's auction. I really wish I had $4,000 for this.
Like, look, man, I don't have $4,000, but I have an actual pizza. And
that'll work.
I have like a copy of, I don't know, Horizon Zero Dawn. And I have a copy of State of Decay 2. And I have this AC adapter. I don't know what it goes to, but you could figure it out. And that would be fun. That'd be a game for you. You know, I think that would be a worthy trade. I think he would take it. I think he'd consider it, maybe.
Maybe. I'll have to send him a message and find out.
Yeah, tell him it's worth it.
Contact seller. Dear person, I have a pizza that I am willing to trade you.
My pizza can be consumed. That's a good deal. Man. Quickly, if you want, you can eat it mock fast.
I'm adding this to my watch list. Because God knows I'm going to have $4,000 to just drop on Earthbound out of nowhere one day.
You'll become a Powerball winner tomorrow. You'll say, oh, shit, Joe.
Hey, you got to play to win, and I don't play, so I'm not going to win.
I'm not going to lie. If I met a close friend who won the Powerball and had that kind of money, and I'm looking at him like, dude, like, I don't usually think like this, but I'm like, I'm trying to pay off this car. It is driving me crazy. Just $4,000 would be great. You're like, nah, man, I ain't got it. But you know what I bought? Earthbound pogs and a scratch and sneak mock piece of air freshener. Ain't that awesome? Like, I'm going to kill you.
There's significantly more than just pogs and an air freshener.
I know, but still, $4,000 shit. I'll give you my copy of Earthbound if you get my car paid off.
No, oh, Jesus.
That is a no-brainer. Like, take the car. Take my We Are Earthbound book. I don't give a shit. I even have the old box still. Just take it all. Pay my car off. You don't need to pay that guy for it. Give it to me.
But do you have the pogs?
Oh, I'll find them for that. Shit, they're probably out back somewhere. Might have them upstairs. I don't even remember they're up there. Like, oh, I did get the pogs. Totally forgot. Who would have thought? Earthbound pogs.
Oh, my God. They're on lists for, like, the rarest pogs from the 90s.
There's a listing of rarest pogs?
Yes. I found like two different lists online and they're on both of them.
See, I have my Garbage Pail Kids and I'm content with those. I enjoy looking at those. I feel nostalgia looking at those and I want to keep them. I can't see myself feeling that level of joy from, look at my stack of pogs. They were cardboard milk tops that you could flick into each other. What'd they do? Nothing. Did they gross out your parents?
Them no. And you used the slammer and you got to trade with friends.
It was a terrible concept.
They were stupid. Garbage they were kids. Fucking stupid.
They're down there with pet rocks, okay? They're terrible. It was a terrible idea. We were dumb kids who loved them. I don't know what our deal was. We were bored. That's it. Children were bored back then. We needed something to entertain us. So we took milk tops and put pictures on the tub and called them fun. Made a game out of it, even.
And the best part is, if you had a pet rock, it would probably be a good slammer.
And it's true, but then you'd be considered cheating and they'd break your hands. they don't take kindly to cheaters on the Pog circuit.
Pog circuit.
That's right. Big money going down in Vegas over Pogs.
The underground Pog scene.
That's right. You show up. What's the password? Let me the fuck in. All right, that's the password. Come on in.
You knew it. I just got to let him in if he knew it.
He did know. It's just how it works, you see. Now, that guy over there, he lost a lot of money in the last Pog final, see, but he's got a sweet tip about this kid, little finger Braxis or something. I don't know. Little toe one. I got no name. I can't even think of a cool name for a Pog popper. I don't know.
I don't know. Anyway, you got games to talk about. Should we get to those?
Let's fire it up. Let's play Pogs. Let's slam it.
Let's slam it. All right. First game to talk about tonight is called Mo Chronicle Hyper, developed by Compile Heart, published by Idea Factory International, released April 26th on the Switch for $19.99. Io is a simple young man with only one problem. He can't talk to women. However, that becomes the least of his problems when he's tasked with going into the dangerous region of Monstopia. There, monster girls have begun rampaging, causing wanton pain and destruction. Have the monster girls simply gone mad, or is there an even greater evil afoot? Purnell, tell us about it.
I don't know if I want to.
I'll give you a set of Pogs if you do.
Oh, now we're talking. Shame away. Pogs. Remember Mo Chronicle? It's back in Pog form. So Mo Chronicle is it's a dungeon crawling JRPG that is honestly very enjoyable. I'll talk about what's enjoyable about it, and then I'll get to the other part. So the way this game works is that your main character is I can't help it. It's going to overlay. It's just going to happen. Anyway, your main character is a weeb, weird, wacky, annoying guy, but you're controlling him. And he hangs out with monster girls, one being his best friend and others that he meets on his journey that then ultimately join up with him. As you play through the game, you will acquire new monster girls to help you further explore the dungeons, starting with one region being the Mushroom Forest, and then progressively getting to other locations as you make your way through. As you find and get to the senses each new monster girl, you will then have them join your party, and they show up as their own class, which can be utilized to access different attack skills and such to have a decent synergy for your party. Because you basically want to win in combat, you want to hit monsters for their weakness, having a sense of what's the chain? Fire, water, wind, and earth. And each of those is weak to the other, is to another, and strong against another. So you want to have a decent combination of characters to hit enemy weaknesses to pretty much decimate the battlefield. And as you fight and fight more often, you will get, they don't really call them skill points, it's just a bar that moves, it's like just stats that you acquire. That eventually allows you to learn new skills within each job that the characters get. Now is where I'm going to get weird, because you can't talk about this game and not be weird. So the way you get new jobs, you are able to The way you meet these characters and get them to join you is normal enemies is just typical fights. But when you come across a monster girl in Monstopia, you have to get into a battle with them. You defeat them by draining their hit points through all their various health gauges, which will cause them to run away. And what I mean by this, you drain one health gauge, a second one comes up, and there's like a total of like four for each one. And if you beat them in that way, they run away and leave you alone, so you may eventually come across them in another fight. But you don't want to do that, because you want a new party member. And every monster girl that you meet can join your party. So how do you get them to join your party? You strip them naked. So, yeah. I'm not going to mince words on this review. I don't know how people do it. It's more hilarious to describe the game for exactly what it is. So you have to, each of the monster girls wears a number of different clothing garments. And to get them to join your party, you have to attack each garment of clothing until it breaks off of her body. And then after you do that, you go into a molestation mini game where you can touch the girls, poke the girls, and rub the girls until your little seal companion or the girl, I'm not sure which, climaxes. And then after that's done, the girl comes to her senses, literally, and then she joins your party.
That is amazing.
That is exactly what happens. Nobody can tell me any different, because if they do, they're lying to themselves. That's exactly how it goes. Then When you get back to the hotel, when you go back to the inn at the main town, each girl that you get to join your party gets a hotel room there. And you can only have up to 5 girls in your party at a time. But you can always go to the hotel and get each girl, you can swap the girls in and out and have a new party configuration. And there's a lot of monster girls, so you can have a decent party config. But in addition
to all, right?
Oh, you do, but it gets funny. So in addition to their base stats or base forms, the girls each also have 3 additional jobs that they can take on, which will sometimes change their attribute, their elemental attribute, and also gives them the new skills they can learn for that job. How do you get job changes? Well, the first thing you have to do is raise their intimacy level beyond level 1, which can be done by giving them presents and touching them. Yes. So okay. Once you've done that to a certain point and you've gotten their intimacy up to level 1, you talk to them and they become willing to assist you by getting job, like changing jobs. And yes, it is a matter of having to get their intimacy to level 1 and then being willing to do it, because the way you change jobs in this game is by giving them job panties, which you find in the world.
Job panties.
Yes. I can't mince words. You give them job draws, working draws. And when you give them these draws, they can equip them to get new costumes and new stats and new, like, basically new job titles. Of course, every costume is skimpier than their default costume. So, yeah, it's interesting. But each one of these allows you to better, even further, customize your party to have the perfect loadout for with each girl being exactly how you want them to be as you play the game. Like, for example, there's a character I like called Killer B. She was initially a full-on melee attacker. Most of her attacks were melee-based. But then I changed her to, I don't even remember the damn thing. It was like Petal Flower or something like that. And she got a gold digger skill, which was earns more money in fights. And also she started taking on more of a magic styling. So I had to put her in the rear instead of the front for my attack party. And it was kind of nice. I was like, okay, I want to mess around with this for a bit. It gave me some options to customize her so she'd still be able to fill a role when I had other people doing the melee component. So honestly, that is the – oh, also there's a lot of like sex-based euphemism in the game too. Like, for example, the first region of the game is called the Mushroom Forest. There are penises that are actually mushrooms, but they're actually penises all over the forest. Nice. It's hysterical. I loved it. But everything's a euphemism, but it's – weird, because I'm gonna tell it to you straight, I'm making fun of this game like crazy because I have to. You make a game like this, I have to do that. But when you lay it on the table as an actual game, a game that you play, the game is actually kind of fun. I was enjoying the game a lot. I like cute characters, which all of the monster girls are cute, and they're not adorable, but they're cute. I don't want to call them adorable because that's disturbing. They're all cute. So I like coming across each one in the dungeon because they're like special fights. When you see a monster girl, that's the only one of that monster girl in the dungeon. And it's kind of like a mini boss fight that you come across when you engage them. So I looked forward to seeing each one because I knew it was a boss fight that would eventually result in a party member. I did not look forward to the touching mini game that came after in order to get them to join my party. And if I could skip that every time, I sure as hell would. And from a gameplay perspective, it's kind of annoying because there's no real indication, like, there's no reconnaissance you can do in advance to say, okay, the Banshee character likes being touched in the head, then the knee, then the tit. There's no indication of that. So what happens is you get 60 seconds, and you have to just kind of flail around the screen and touch everywhere and hope that you're poking and prodding at the right places to get them aroused. That's the game. So there's not even any strategy to it. It's literally poking and prodding at monster girls, hoping you're touching the right spots, kind of like real life. Huh. Shocker. But that's the game. Like, that part annoys me. But once I get the girl in my party, it's cool to have that one more element of customization, one more opportunity to get more, like, in-game character dialogue at the end because you talk to them and kind of bond with them more. Though the bonding can be annoying because the main character, EO, is a complete dork. Christ, he's a dork. But the game itself is a lot of fun. Like, I really did enjoy playing it. I like exploring the dungeons. I enjoyed meeting the girls. I enjoyed swapping the characters in and out and getting their different jobs established. It's a lot of fun. It's just the fact that there's just that other element, which I will acknowledge outright that I'm pretty sure the developer knew who they were catering to when they released this game. They weren't thinking, oh, yeah, 12-year-old kids are going to love this, or that 16-year-old girl, yeah, she's going to be old. I see, who am I kidding? I know a number of 16-year-old girls that would love this game. But anyway, I'm pretty sure they know who their demographic is. So for those who are not familiar with Mo Chronicles at all, if you get skeeved out by poking and prodding like girls who are supposed to be adults but are clearly not, this may not be the game for you. However, if you get onto that, or if you're indifferent to that, and if you like dungeon crawling JRPGs, I think you'll find a lot to enjoy here. It's not complicated. It's complicated in the sense that you don't know what presents to give them to level them up, because there's no clue for that either. You just have to guess what presents they like. Even though there is a likes and dislikes menu in their biography in the stats menu, you really cannot utilize that to say, hey, she would love this disfigured doll because she likes flowers and honey. Like, you have to guess the presents, too, which kind of annoys the hell out of me. It's basically like, save your game, then go to the girl you want to talk to and give her every present in your inventory and just write down what she liked, and then reload your save file and give her only the good stuff. That's pretty much what happens there, and it's annoying. But it is what it is. I mean, other games have done this, too. Just want you to know that you're getting to that with this, too. And for all I know, since I barely did much with the intimacy, aside from getting the job panties going, I don't even think you necessarily need it. It just makes it so that you can communicate with the girls more. Also, it helped that I didn't want to do the rub mini game beyond getting them to recruit my party, which meant that was one less way to get intimacy up. But that's just me. If you want to get down with that, you'll get that intimacy to the moon, baby, and you'll unlock all kinds of cool bonuses, most likely. But I was just about the dungeon crawling, getting the new monster girls, and customizing a party to beat up more monster girls and get to the end of the game, so I could figure out why the monster girls were going crazy. But spoiler alert, people aren't playing this game for the plot.
Oh, they're playing it for the plot, all right. Just different plot.
They're making a different plot. But it's just, oh my God. No, I'd love to meet the guy. For the record, if someone's listening to this and they actually are playing this for the plot, please humor me by actually writing to the show or messaging the show saying, dude, I love the plot of Mo Chronicles. It was the thing that drew me the most. I wanted to save Monstertopia and find the great monster girl and give her, what was it, the divine panty cloth to calm her down and save the monster girl race. God damn it. Just, the story's dumb. But if you enjoyed, please tell me to give me more perspective on what I could appreciate of it. But as from the pervy aspect of it, if you're into that kind of stuff, it's awesome for that. It's got a ton of it going on. If you're down for the dungeon crawling aspects and the item management and the battle system, which again, like I said, is a fairly basic battle system. Oh, forgot. I got to mention one aspect of the battle system that I forgot. But this is funny too, but also kind of fun for the game. So all the monster girls can fight and they can defend and they can use magic. That's their base set of skills. Io, the main character, cannot fight. However, he can do a few things. He can use items. In fact, he's the only person that can use items in the battle party. The monster girls cannot. He's the only one that can initiate an escape from the battles. And he has one other really hilarious thing he can do. So, Io has a desire gauge. He has a desire gauge. It's his libido, okay?
Oh,
and
God.
Every round, he can attempt to charge his libido. Every time he does that, the game makes a sound where he goes, there's a button to turn that sound off. You're going to do that by Apple 3, I assure you, because I sure as hell did. In addition to that, if you want to charge desire gauge even further, faster rather, the girls can also charm him, which is basically, let's be real, they're probably flashing him or something. But they charm him, and his desire goes even higher. So it gets to a max percent of 100, but sometimes he'll get his desire gauge will go up too fast, and he climaxes, god damn it. He basically, they call it calm time, but basically desire goes out of control. He explodes and he goes into calm time, which means he loses a turn until his calm time goes down to zero and his desire is ready to rage again. But if it doesn't accidentally trigger on his turn, he can, what do they call it? He basically unleashes on a girl. Passes his desire to the monster girl. And the higher desire percentage is, the stronger the attack boost is at the next that girl gets on her next attack. So from an actual perspective of description, this shit's absurd and ridiculous.
I love it.
There's no denying it. It's absurd as shit.
I don't even care about your verdict. I'm buying the shit out of this game when it launches on Friday.
Yes! But from a gameplay perspective, I honestly enjoyed it. Once I turned his horrible voice off and just did the thing and balanced out who I wanted to buff up for an attack and when to use items versus not and when to flee, I had fun with that too. The game mechanics work, aside from the whole touching thing. Because that does not fucking work, even from a gameplay perspective. That's just dumb. But the game itself works, and I genuinely, honestly, had fun playing it. And I do intend to do the post-game bonus crap, too, and play more of it, because I like it. I think the game is fun. It's just that you have to know what you're getting when you go in, because I don't want anybody writing a shotgun. And you know what? No one told me there'd be, like, you know, Dragon Girl titties or something, anime titty. No one told me there'd be that in the game. Well, I am telling you. So don't buy it on my account if that would offend you. But if it doesn't offend you, well, you know, my verdict might be it's going to be buy it. Buy it.
Buy the anime titties.
Buy the anime titty with good gameplay. If that's your thing. If that is, honestly, I don't even think there's even a try it in this. It's either if you're okay with those elements in your dungeon crawler, this is a solid buy it game. Be prepared to laugh or be aroused. I don't know which you're going to do, but as long as you enjoy it, it doesn't matter to me. But I think it's a solid buy it if you're okay with that stuff. If you are not down with that kind of stuff, despite the fact that it's a decent dungeon crawler, it's an ignore.
Oh, man. Yeah, I think I have to pick this one up.
Oh, yeah, man.
Calm time after you explode. Oh, my God.
And I like the fact that I think originally on the Vita, it came out on the Vita, but it never got a U.S. release. People were importing it from Asia. So it's nice that you can just grab it on the Switch. Which is kind of funny. You can get it on the Switch. Yeah.
Sony would shut this game down in a heartbeat anymore. And Nintendo's like, bring that shit over here. We are awesome with it.
You want to
bring them titties.
you want to unleash on that girl and get a sat boost? Go for it on the Switch.
Oh, man. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Sigma Theory Global Cold War, developed by Goblin Studio, published by Miklo Studio, released April 18th on Steam for $19.99, a turn-based strategy game in a futuristic global Cold War from the award-winning creators of Out There. Recruit a squad of special agents and run your intel agency to secure the control of the Singularity. Purnell, tell us about this one.
Okay, so in the game Sigma Theory, you are a government operative who can't talk to girls, but you're in luck because all across the globe, there are women who are in trouble and need your help to convert them from being evil. And you do that by touching them. Let me stop. But
oh my Lord.
The goblins
is going to listen to this and they're going to be like, what the hell is he talking about? Our game isn't like that at all.
Don't give false information. And fortunately, goblins, I am not giving false information, because the real Sigma Theory is that you are an operative for any of a variety of countries, not necessarily the U.S. That's who I chose for my run through of the game. And your job is how to describe this. There has been a technological breakthrough in which something called the Sigma Theory has been established and realized, and if it can be fully developed, it will result in a breakthrough of technological and astronomical proportions for the entire world. So, of course, being the world and that is, you know, controlled by various political powers, everybody wants to be in control of that bad boy. Everybody. So your job as an operative from any of a number of countries you can select from the beginning of the game is to become the country that has the best control over Sigma Theory and is pretty much the top dog at the end when all said and done and it's been discovered. So how does this work? Well, honestly, it's kind of cool. It works sort of like a board game, honestly, which is why I was originally intrigued by it. So at the beginning of the game, you have to choose a country that you want to be affiliated with. And each country has its own particular perks that makes them worth choosing from the start. Like some might start with two very cool scientists that can't be taken over by, can't be bribed or converted. Like they're yours for keeps. Some might give you scientists that are constantly effective. Like your country just has great scientists. Doesn't mean they'll stick around, but they're great scientists. Some might start you better off from like a monetary perspective in a sense of like your country not caring so much about using bribes to get what they want and so on and so forth. Just a variety of different perks. So once you pick the country, you are then given a roster of choice between a number of operatives you can recruit to be a part of your team. Now, this was an interesting little tidbit. So every operative has a variety of stats. There's the intelligence stat, the strength stat, and then there are a variety of traits. All of these things are related to how you'll play the game later, which I will eventually get into. But essentially, all these different traits are what you'll use to determine if you want a person on your team. Once you establish these things, you can select and try to recruit them. You can recruit up to four people, and you'll try to get them to join your cause. They will ask you a question. If you do not answer them in a way that will benefit them and make them want to work with you, they will turn you down. So you might look at the game and try to think, I'm going to min-max my stats and get only the best characters I see here. But if you're not good at answering their questions, you'll be stuck with the duds because you screwed up, agent. But I only screwed up a few times. I still got a decent roster of characters who are mixed bags.
That's good.
Once you get your team ready to go, you're dumped onto a main map. And on that map, calendar.
Holy shit, I think my mic just picked up that thunder.
Is it about the storm, not you? I know.
There is a storm a-going on, so we should probably speed these up.
Hopefully we're going to be slow.
Oh, shit. It is pouring right now. Holy hell. Anyway, as you were saying, sorry about the thunder interruption.
No worries. So what happens now is once you get into the game proper, you are hit with a variety of different, indicators on the game. The first thing is, let's go into just how the game is won. Like, you see the globe as a whole, all the various countries in play. With those countries, you can see whether or not, how alert they are to you, basically how distrusting and alert they are to you being, devious. And the other gauge is how much they trust you as far as a community partner. So for example, you might say that, France thinks that you're a great partner in arms, but they might be also cautious of you. So they'll talk shop with you, but at the same time, you start doing some nefarious junk, they will spot it because they're onto your bullshit. America.
America
spying. But in addition to all the different countries, there's also a variety of gauges at the top of the screen that can indicate progress on the game. So there's your country allegiance, your primary, the country you started with. So when you start the game, you have to kind of make decisions that will ultimately make your country happy. If they start to distrust you, your relationship percentages will go down. And if you get to zero, well, you'll probably die because they claim there's firing is possible. But you know what happens? You're not going to get fired. You're going to get murdered in a dark alley behind a subway. But anyway, don't let your relationship with your country get to 0%. There's also a doomsday clock. And what that means is that as all these countries are fighting over this Sigma theory, crazy things are happening in general. People are making bad decisions, using technology for bad, doing whatever they need to do to get what they want. And if relations get too sour across the globe, well, let's just say the potential for nuclear fallout can happen. You don't want that to happen. So you'll be kind of juggling that too to keep doomsday from at bay as best as possible. And lastly, there's the actual Sigma theory technology gauge. And that represents, how far along you are into developing the final ultimate technology that can be utilized to ultimately win the game. So you're basically managing that too. So now that I've established those few things, how to get in the description of this. Okay. So there's a calendar. And every day your agents need something to do. You can send them to new countries where you can then attempt to perform a number of different acts. I'm not going to explain the whole game because otherwise it'll be all friggin' night. But basically, you can send an agent to a country and then attempt to do a variety of things. You can have a meeting with that country's diplomat, in which case you can then try to learn information about that diplomat, which can then be utilized to blackmail them or to make your negotiations with them easier. You might learn that the diplomat for a country is rather gullible, or that they're susceptible to money, or that they're really horny and they like women. In which case, you can seduce them. I'm not making that up either. This game gives you cool options that you can bribe them, you can seduce them, you can kidnap people, whatever.
Oh, wow. But, I thought you were fucking with me again.
No, I'm dead serious. And it's honestly, I like it. I like the fact that it gives you these options. And of course, depending on how you try to tread during some of these situations, it could go either very well or very badly. So you don't just willy-nilly go on every engagement and go seduce, abduct. No. Play your cards right, man. Because, for example, bribing might get the job done, but your government doesn't really like when you're just giving money away to recruit, scientists or get the government on your side. So that might not fare well with your benefactors if you're giving your money away to bribe others. You can also do research to like locate the scientists that those countries have working on Sigma theory. And once you find information on them, you can then use that information to steal them away to your side, which can be pretty fun in itself. There is also the means of which to go into actual conflict in the event that, say, you want to abduct them by force or abduct even like the chairman or something. But when that happens, you go into like a whole weird scenario where you hope your strength meter is high enough and you can make decisions that will keep your agent from getting captured or worse. I forgot to mention too, there's interesting other side little mechanics. Like, for example, the idea, like let's say you, every once in a while, you might say be working and then you'll get a message on one of your calendar days from your head agency that says, hey, while you were gone, apparently a spy just broke into our network. We have only a few days before they get our secrets and get out. Which means now you have to rush back to your home country, locate the spy, identify them, and either chase them off or capture them, which also can be slightly stat-related to determine whether or not you can pull it off or not. So you hope you send the right agent home to do the job. Now, it's cool in the fact that nothing in this game is really set in stone. For example, you even get a spouse at the beginning of the game. You have to select a spouse, and that spouse can either help you or turn on you. Which I found really weird. Like, how is it that I necessarily have a spouse who is like high up in a spot in an agency that could also do something? Why can't my spouse just be like a woman that works at a bank or something? I don't have to worry about her turning on me and getting me killed or whatever. But I digress. You have to work with that. You have to balance your relationship life at home. Every once in a while, she'll like maybe message you with a dilemma or a request or something. You have to kind of talk to her and hope that you can keep your relationship solid so she doesn't like screw you over. Also, your own agents could turn on you if not handled properly. Some of these agents are not necessarily on the up and up and have their own little agendas. And depending on their stats, you might find out you have a double agent working on you that you don't know. And you have to pretty much figure out what to do. You might already just get ice your own agent and try to get a new one to replace them. You can get other agents to work as double agents for you. Like say, for example, you find a scientist at a country, you discover who they are, you discover what they like, you can bribe them. Like I had one agent who was like in lonely. He was kind of working under duress, and he was interested in women. So I had my agent seduce him. It worked. And then rather than have him leave the country, I had him stay there and work as a double agent. So he was kicking back information and technology developments for my cause. But they were none the wiser. So each particular day on the calendar that goes by, you'll get a status briefing update determining what progress your agents have made on whatever missions you've set them off on. In addition, any actual developments in Sigma theory that have been accomplished by your committee will be displayed there as well. Depending on the scientists you have working for you, either as double agents in other countries or at home within your own country, that will determine how far along your research into Sigma theory will go. And when you hit certain milestones, you will get benefits that can actually help your agents perform their jobs better, which I thought was kind of cool because that means that each game can work a little differently depending on how it goes. You might not end up with a guy who's a team that's skilled in robotics, which means you won't get the robotics bonus in your game. You might get something completely unrelated to help you get further along in a different way. Maybe I'm missing something here. Because there's a lot that goes into this game, but it's actually surprisingly, once you start to play more of it, it all kind of comes together. Like it's complicated, but not just like a good board game would be.
So it explains it well as you're playing.
Yes and no. It does explain it well, but I think a number of things, also like a typical board game that's on a high euro, a heavy euro scale, a lot of it I also just kind of had to pick up on my own. Like the information to learn it is there, but it wasn't until I was really doing it and trying it that I was like, oh, this makes sense now. And then the game will go on in a little bit more detail. Like, okay, Parnell, it seems like you want to, you know, set up this business meeting. Click on contact. Okay, now submit the meeting date. This shows when they're available. Do you want it? Select yes. So it walks you through stuff, but initially until you get the grasp of the game, you'll be kind of looking at it like it's just a bunch of gibberish on your screen. It takes a little bit of hands-on manipulation before you're like, okay, now I understand what it's telling me I can do. Now I see this is making sense. Oh, this message popped up. They're telling me that based on my technological development, they want to make a deal with my country. Okay, I can see where this would go and why this would be a problem versus why it would be good. Like, it just starts to come together. But at first, it's going to seem like it's a bit overwhelming, which is not a bad thing. That's board game 101. A lot of people who, if you're into board games that are not like, you know, chutes and ladders and crap, you'll probably be used to that kind of thing too. So don't let that be necessarily a deterrent. Just know that you're going to come at this you're going to be working to pick it up a little bit, but it comes to you fairly quickly once you settle down and really work with the game. Personally, I found this to be an enjoyable product. I had fun playing it. I'm not great at it, admittedly. In fact, there was a moment in the game where, actually more than one moment in the game, where I was like ranked nine out of 10 countries in my, you know, status of like, you know, progression. And then out of nowhere, I had 2 Sigma Theory breakthroughs on one day, and that shot me up to rank number 2.
Ooh.
I was like, all right, works for me. Shit. Now all of a sudden the World Bank started getting my business, which for the record, I kind of like that too, because I'm trying to play in a way where I don't, which is so not how the world works, I'm sure, but I'm trying to play in a way where I don't do anything violent. Anything I do is going to be the diplomatic or behind the scene, but I don't want to do any violence. Like, I have tough guys who are like beating up and interrogating spies that I catch on U.S. soil, but I'm trying not to be harsh. I'm not trying to do anything that, you know, violent on in the game itself.
Yeah.
So far, it's been working out pretty well, but yeah, that could change. I'm sure that could change the drop of an eye, and suddenly my attack drone needs to come out and do some work. But also, every once in a while, you might get a request from another country or another outside agency that wants you to do something for them. And sometimes that could result in you getting a boost or boon from their country. Or in the case of some others, it might be a matter of either A, if you do what they want you to do, they'll just leave you alone and form a partnership, or they'll kidnap and murder one of your scientists or agents if you don't do what they say.
Oh, so that's always pleasant.
Oh, yeah, it gets rowdy out here in the streets. But every once in a while, you kind of have to shift gears. Go, okay, I know you were trying to smooth this diplomat, but guess what? Times have changed. Now you got to get down to Zimbabwe and stop this riot or assist in this riot. Like, it's interesting stuff like that. But like I said, honestly, once I got used to it and accepted the fact that, okay, I had 4 agents, 4 turns, okay, give them all assignments, move on to the next day, and the idea of trying to juggle all that, I started having fun with the game. And this is one of those things where I feel like as you get better at it, you'll start being able to make better, more informed decisions. You'll be choosing different countries that will ultimately impact how you play the game. As you play, you'll actually also gain access to unlock new agents that you can unlock on future playthroughs as your starting group of agents to play with, which is kind of cool. So that's going to further alter how your play experience works in future sessions. It's a quality game.
Cool. So $20 on it. What do you think?
I think if you're a fan of like solid, like strategy board games, like Risk, I know I said Risk, but like, or more Euro on the Euro side of things that are strategic, I think this is a solid game to buy. This is another case of if you like board games, but you're not sure how you feel about games that involve less action and more thinking and like, you know, piece manipulation, I'll call it, then this is a try just to get your feet wet. But you definitely need to have that desire to do that kind of gameplay to enjoy this game. This is not a game you can kind of sit down and just kind of like bro out to.
Gotcha. So you need to set time aside to play this one.
Yes. It's time well spent, but you definitely need to put some time aside to play.
Awesome. Sounds good.
It is good.
All right. Well, you got one more game to talk about. That is called Iron Snout, developed by Snout Up Games, published by Rattalaika Games. Released April 16th on Xbox One, PS4, and Vita. April 18th on the Switch for $4.99. This little piggy ran into a pack of wolves and gave them the beating of a lifetime. Pernell, tell us about Iron Snout.
I think you just did.
Pretty much.
This little piggy kicked ass. So, Iron Snout is a straightforward, easy to run game. The idea is you're a pig and you're in the middle of the screen and wolves want to eat your ass. They come from the left. They come from the right. They come with guns. Not saying they never come with a gun, but they come with batons. They come with swords. They come with baskets. Every which way they want to consume. But you're a badass pig who knows how to throw down. So what you'll do is not leave the center of the screen, but you'll press up, down, left, and right in various combinations to perform kick-ass combos. For example, if you press right, you'll punch the right side of the screen. Push left, you'll punch to the left. You push down, you'll duck. If you push up twice, you'll do a spin kick. And also just jump up, push up once, and then right or left, and you'll jump up and then punch. But basically, that is your primary roster of moves, and you use that to keep all the wolves at bay for as long as possible. This is pretty much the game. Because every once in a while, I will say that I thought was kind of cool, that interesting. It's like, it's not, at first I thought it was just, okay, push the button, attack the guys, you're fun. But an element to this style of game that I'm not used to this game has is that sometimes when you knock the enemy down, their weapon that they were carrying will fly off the screen or fly up into the air. And if you time your button press right, you can catch it. Sometimes it's get a swing off on it, or other times just throw it at enemies and get stuck in their face and knock them out. And once you start getting to a point where there's tons of enemies flying from the left and right, you'll get this weird like Bruce Lee combination moment, like punch, punch, kick, punch. Oh, thing, hatchet goes in the air, catch in the air, throw it behind you. Oh, enemies throw a hatchet, duck, it hits the other guy behind them. And then you're just kind of getting this euphoric motion, this nice flow going, and you're just beating the tar out of wolves. And that's the game. Like, that's literally it. There are three areas you can fight on, and each of those three areas has a different set of wolves that will attack you in different ways, which will alter the way you play the game in its own way, too. Nothing dramatic, just you'll be looking for different hazards and reacting to them accordingly. And unfortunately, that's the only detriment I found to this game, is there's only three stages. I wanted more. Like, I wanted to access other levels and see what kind of wolves would come after me and how I'd have to engage them. There's a bunch of different pigs you can unlock, though they're just cosmetic skins, so nothing beyond that. But you'll unlock them based on the number of wolves you've killed in the game. Otherwise, the level will just be unlocked as you kill, like, small milestones. Like, you kill 100 pigs or wolves in the first stage, you'll unlock the street. I think it's like 125 wolves on the second. You unlock the pirate ship, and that's pretty much the game. What do I think of the game? It is a fun time waster. Like, I booted it up. I actually played in one sitting through all the stages and got a high score of like 300 on the third stage, which Ooh. I thought was really nice. I was kicking wolf ass.
Yeah, that's impressive. 300 in one go. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah, man, it was fun. I was really enjoying it. And oddly enough, I thought the third stage was the easiest one. It was more going on there, and it was more chaotic, but I had the easiest time with it, and I had the hardest time on the first stage.
Interesting.
But honestly, the game itself was enjoyable. Like I said, it makes for a nice little time waster. You boot it up, beat up some wolves, have some fun with that, and then you turn it off and move on to the main course. It's a good filler game, I'll call it, to use board game terminology. It is a nice light filler.
Rattle Lake has been pretty good about putting out games like this that are just fun and quick bursts you could come back to every now and then and just have fun with it. It's not complex. It's not a story heavy game. It's just beat the shit out of some wolves and move on with your life.
I agree. Though Rattle Lake, it would be nice if you dump some resources and just making a few more levels. I know the game is pretty cheap, but I also can't imagine it takes too many resources to make like another skin, like a futuristic stage with robo wolves or something. I don't know. Like, just add a few more levels to go to so it can have a little bit more diversity on the stages. I think it would be awesome. It would just extend the life of the game for what it is.
Well, if Snout Up is listening, Chop Chop with some extra stages, some DLC, some extra achievements, I'd pay $2 for some more stages.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be worth it. It's like you just want more places to beat the shit out of wolves.
Yeah. Well, $5 on this one. What do you say?
You know where this is about to go.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck it. Why not?
I love that review.
Damn right. Fuck it. Why not?
Fuck it. It's $5. Just pick it up.
Exactly. You'll spend more to go see Endgame this weekend.
Yeah, you probably will.
You'll spend more for the snacks you'll eat during Endgame this weekend.
Yeah, you definitely will.
Hell, you'll spend more on half the beverage you'll consume at Endgame this weekend, and possibly the parking, depending on where you live.
Or gas to get there.
That's right. Ultimately, definitely fuck it. Why not? It's a fun game. Enjoy it.
Awesome. Sounds good. Pernell, it is always a pleasure having you on chatting about these games. Do you have any final thoughts before we move on?
Don't spoil Endgame for other people, you jackasses. Just enjoy it and move on.
Yeah, don't be a dick.
Damn right.
All right, moving on. Chris Taylor's here. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, doing fine. Just hanging in there on the internet.
As we all do.
Just hang. Had bad connections all week, and at first it was like stuff they had to fix on their end, and then it turned out we had a bad cable, so they had to come and fix it on our end too. So,
oh boy.
Exciting stuff.
It sounds it.
But I'm actually kind of excited because I got I finally got one of those like fancy arcade fight sticks for my Switch.
Nice.
The Hori RAD Hayabusa, which is like the really nice one. And it's funny because the person I was buying it from was like, "Oh yeah, getting ready for Mortal Kombat, huh?" And I was like, "Yeah." not at all saying I was getting it so I could play like Pac-Man and, you know, top-down shooters and stuff.
What did it run you?
I got it for half price. It's normally $150, and I got it for half that off of a Craigslist purchase.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it was too good to pass up.
Damn, I'm jealous.
Yeah.
Too bad I don't have $75 anyway.
I know, right? I barely did. But I, you know, indeed, the first thing I did when I got home is I loaded up the Namco Museum arcade pack and started playing. I played Pac-Man and then Tower of Druaga.
Nice.
That's how to break it in. Yeah, I'm going to have to like pick up Mortal Kombat 11, though, because I know a lot of people, either secondhand or firsthand, that like, or, you know, like friends or friends of friends that have actually worked on it.
Oh, so yeah.
It's pretty close to home development team, if you know the Materia Collective folks, especially.
Yeah, and then hearing that Super Square did the credits theme, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
So happy for my friends. It's so cool.
I know, right? It's cool that people that we know do things that like directly affect us, you know?
Yeah.
And then you realize
that our friends are cooler than us.
Yeah, you know. That's all right, though. At least we get to talk about their stuff.
True. Well, we're not talking about Mortal Kombat, but...
No. Well, I don't know.
That one's too big for us.
Oh, we'll get there.
Maybe one day.
Maybe Mortal Kombat 47.
In another 6 years, maybe we'll get up to Mortal Kombat levels.
Yeah, there you go. Keep reaching for those stars, Joe.
I'm reaching.
Anyway,
you do have three games to talk about. Are you ready to dive into these?
I do. Let's do it.
All right. First game to talk about is called Agalos, developed by Storybird Games, published by P-Cube, released April 25th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $14.99. Agalos is a mesmerizing new action RPG inspired by the likes of Wonder Boy that looks like it was plucked straight out of the 16-bit era, but plays like a modern-day Marvel. Chris, tell us about it.
Oh, crap. I was in the middle of drinking. Agalos, yes. So this is one that I actually requested to cover because I saw the preview screens and I was like, oh, hell yeah, this looks amazing. Sure enough, as soon as I turned it on, it was amazing. And so I don't know. I don't have anything else to say about it. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, you sold me on it.
Yeah. So, it is a game that's an action RPG with the running around and the swishing of swords and the downward thrusting of swords. I was happy to see that as an early on power-up that you can gain, you know, Zelda 2 style. And, you play as a dude with a sword who I've already forgotten whether he's actually named Agalos or if that's just another thing. hard to tell with these games that are on the light side of the story. You basically run through stages that are interconnected. It's very Metroidvania style. Early on you see obstacles that you're like, well, I can't get through this, so I must have to come back here later.
No.
And like you come across like three different locked doors before you end up in the level where you actually get a key that unlocks all of them and things like that. So exciting stuff there. Always like to see that. Your first task is to basically save a princess, and then once you do, I actually fully expected that the princess would get kidnapped again, but it turns out no. That was just, you know, you actually don't have to rescue a princess, unless that's something they planned for like late game or whatever. But as soon as you save her, hand her over to the king and get through something that I swear to God, I thought was going to be a suspicious, like, you know, some kind of twist, and it just wasn't. You are then tasked with basically collecting four different elements, the four different elements being in four different kingdoms, which you have to reach by a network of dungeons and boss fights. This is stuff that I would say seems pretty cookie cutter as far as like these 16 and 8-bit adventures go, but the thing that I found about this one is that it was just surprisingly nostalgic. More so even than something like Shovel Knight, which, you know, when you play Shovel Knight, you get that hell yeah feeling of like, oh, this is the 8-bit game that I was missing as a kid, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they finally made it. They made the ultimate NES game. That's the kind of feeling that I think this game kind of evoked. And yeah, it is fashioned after Wonder Boy in the sense that the exploration aspect, purchasing your equipment, and, you know, gaining levels, finding items and solving puzzles with items and things like that aspect. And, of course, the too cute to kill factor. Most enemies are adorable, but you have to murder, but you have to kill them anyway, to get those precious experience points. And also because they will eat you.
Yay.
Yay. boss fights are nice and gigantic, which I really appreciated. Definitely reminded me of the somewhat recent Wonder Boy 3 Dragon's Trap remake, which, you know, you got your bosses that fill up the screen and they have that weakness that utilizes conveniently the last power up that you got in order to get to them. And but I really like the cleverness that's employed in the power-ups, because they're not just, you know, standard fare, like, you know, oh, now you have a double jump. Oh, now you have a wall climb, you know. Those are probably coming, but this one, instead, it's like, oh, you have a magic spell that can either harm enemies or turn spirits, who are invincible usually, into platforms so that you can turn enemies into ways to get to other places. And you know, with limited ammo, you have to hit an enemy in order to charge up the special power. It's a dang, that was my cell phone. Sorry. And so I really like that it's got a little bit of a different take there. Again, like I said, the sprite work in this is gorgeous and fantastic. I cannot say enough good stuff about it. Like, you know, getting through the first level and seeing like 4 layers of parallax scrolling and you're like, yes. And and of course, you know, like I said, this is a modern game. It's not a strict throwback, so there are some modern conveniences, such as, you know, smooth scrolling, widescreen presentation, you know, great frame rate, things like that. The game feels so comfortable to play. Like, it really, as soon as you start playing it, the controller just feels right, you know?
Yeah.
No A to jump and Y to attack nonsense here. I mean, it doesn't let you change the controls, and it doesn't let you put it in CRT mode, but that's because it is already perfect by default. So,
which is good.
Yeah, which is
good.
Get
it right the first time around, you don't have to fuck with it.
Exactly. So yeah, I found this game to have a lot of charm. Oh, and of course there's towns in between dungeons too. Like I said, where you can purchase equipment. And, in the first town, you run across monkeys that just kind of hang out. And if you walk by them, then they just reach out and grab a coin, like really conveniently or like really, what do you call it? Really casually.
Bringing monkeys.
Yeah, I know. I actually just really like that touch. And
that they rob you.
Yeah, that they rob you of like one coin, but they do so like, and one of the villagers is like, monkeys just can't help it. They have to steal, even if it's something that's useless to them. And of course, that factors into a puzzle that you have to, you know, that you have to solve. But I don't know. I just really like the personality and charm in this game, even though it's you know, it's not filled with NPCs or anything like that. Although I will make a point of mentioning that in the castle where you kind of start your quest, every single guard is a different sprite. Like, they're different heights. Some of them have facial hair. Like, I really appreciated that.
It's the like, little it's, details.
It's one of the first games I've ever played that doesn't have copy-pasted guards in a castle. And it didn't have to. It didn't have to. They didn't have to do that, but they did. So yeah, overall, I can't let it go without mentioning the soundtrack. The soundtrack
I was gonna ask.
It's really good. It definitely is 8-bit instrumentation. Although it's a little more lush, I would say. It's maybe halfway between 8-bit and 16-bit. An interesting thing that I noticed in it is that every time, not every time, but many times I would hear a new tune and I would actually be able to pinpoint the NES game it reminded me of. So I'd get into like a dungeon and I'm like, oh, OK, that's from Batman Return of the Joker on NES. this one sounds like the ending theme to Journey to Silius. Oh, this one is reminding me of Riddle from Castlevania 3. It's just like, you know, and none of the songs are ripoffs or anything. They're just very, very authentic. And thus, you know, you start to hear like, you know, like I said, you can actually hear like, remnants of tunes long past in these compositions.
That's really
it's not
cool.
Like, yeah, and they're, that's because all, as well that they rely on solid melodies instead of like, you know, overt style blasting you with arpeggios and things like that. I mean, as nice as that is, I love both styles, but this one definitely leans on its, like, you know, sort of Konami and Sunsoft roots, if you will.
Well, overall, $15 on it. What do you say?
Oh, it's a bargain. Go and get it. It's this is definitely one of those kind of games that I really hope people don't sleep on. I'm really hoping people check this one out because it is masterfully crafted. I mean, I really appreciate every aspect of this game so far, and I am definitely going to play this one to the end because I would really like to see what comes of it. And the last time a Metroidvania style game got me that hype was actually Chasm, which is more 32-bit style, but still, you know, I got obsessed with that game for like 2 or 3 weeks until I finally beat it, and I was like, you know, just wanted to start it over again with a different seed, because that one's a roguelike. But yeah, this one is a great adventure, and I think that people should definitely check it out.
Awesome. This one's been on my wish list for a while, so I'm glad to hear that it's good.
Yeah, I haven't found any real weak spots in this one, so it's a worthwhile pickup.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I am picking that up.
Yeah, do it.
All right, next game to talk about is called Boxaline, developed and published by Cubite Interactive, released April 10th on the Switch for $1.99. Discover the power of the Boxaline puzzles, a simple yet challenging puzzle game where you put your brain to work while trying to eliminate all the boxes with as few moves as possible. Relax, have a peaceful moment, and boost your brain. Chris, tell us about it.
Okay, well, I was excited about this one because they actually advertise that they will make your brain better. And I don't know about you, but I've had a brain that sucks ever since I was a kid. So I was really looking forward to this game turning me into some kind of like genius or otherwise like stable person. Sadly, I don't think that was the case. That might have been a little overselling it. However, this is actually a fun little puzzle game. So the concept is real simple. You have a, you know, every stage, and it immediately just starts you off like on whatever stage you were last on. It barely bothers with like a title screen or anything like that. So basically it has an arrangement of blocks of a certain color, or certain colors, and you basically have to highlight one and drag it over to, a set of other blocks, and if three or more touch, then they disappear. And the key is that you have to get all the blocks to disappear, and thus they have to be divided into, you know, connectable sets of three or more. Now, the limitations here are that you cannot move a block without making something disappear. It's not getting it in as few moves as possible. I think that's actually not correct. You have to be very strategic in how you do these moves. It doesn't matter how many moves that you do, as long as every single one clears something off the screen. Otherwise, you fail. Yeah. You have to start the stage over. So it's all about building the strategy of like dividing sort of the whole playing field into threes, or into maneuvering the blocks to where they'll all be ready to go if you get the one connecting piece in there and, you know, get them all busted. And although I would say this, so the game has 99 levels. They tell you that right at the start. I would say it starts getting really hard about level 15, And then about level 21 is where I was really starting to have trouble. They introduced things like multicolored blocks and things like that.
Oh, boy.
They throw in all kinds of stuff. So it has a nice long learning period of many levels before you're actually like supposed to really think about it. But man, it was actually really enjoyable to sit there and think about it for me, because it's, you know, it's one of those things where it's, no puzzle is unfair. Like, it's all out there in front of you. So it's just, you know, and there's no punishment for having to repeat anything. So, you know, you can just play around with stuff until you get it. There's clearly more than one solution for certain puzzles. So it's just kind of like sort of thinking your way to the goal. And, I really appreciate that in a puzzle game like this. It is relaxing. The graphics are nice and, shiny. You know, the blocks look really good. They basically exist in a plane of nothingness, though, so don't expect any, like, backgrounds or anything like that. This is all occurring in, like, a dreamscape eternity of, you know, whiteness. The music's nice and chill. It's just kind of a chill ambient thing. And, you know, I was really actually impressed with the way everything was sort of set up for how low of a price this game is. So,
well, then for $2, what do you say?
I mean, $2, I say, why not? there's nothing. Yeah. I think that the puzzles are actually really clever, really cleverly put together. I definitely don't think this, puzzle game is like any kind of waste of time. I don't know that it'll improve your brain. You know, results may vary. Yeah. I mean, if you haven't played many puzzle games, then sure, maybe this one will inspire some personal growth. But other than that, I say $2, it's definitely worth messing around with and challenging yourself for, you know, 100 levels. It's cheaper than a crossword book anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of crosswords.
Oh, hey.
Final game to talk about tonight. I know. It's like you tried.
Mm.
But you didn't, did you? That was just perfect, happy coincidence.
Yes, exactly. It may be just my brain has improved that much now.
See? It does improve your brain.
All right, great.
Thinking outside the box. kill me. Anyway, final game to talk about tonight is called Crossovers by Paugi, developed and published by Lightwood Games, released April 17th on PS4 for $7.99. Solve crossword puzzles one letter at a time. Crossovers are little crosswords with just one letter missing. Find the letters, then unscramble them to solve the cryptic clue. Crossovers by Paugi contains 200 crossword clues and 200 terrible jokes as a reward for solving each one. Chris, tell us about Crossovers, although I think I just did.
And I just did, actually. because there's the 6-in-1... Paugi collection that's available on Switch that I actually reviewed a few months ago. And this is indeed one of the games that was on that collection. Crossovers by Paugi. Well, of course, Paugi being who they are, this is, it's a game that, you know, we've had many like word search, word Sudoku, all kinds of like different clever, you know, crossword and word search style games from these folks. And, they all feature the same graphics and more or less the same soundtrack. This one definitely has some songs that are in all the other games. And, of course, the terrible, terrible puns that we love.
Yes.
And this game is indeed one of the worst ones for that. In a good way, yes. But just because, as it says, you know, there's 200 puzzles and, you know, every single these puzzles go pretty fast because of the way this game plays. And thus you get about a pun every couple of minutes. And while I would argue that sometimes they're just straight up wordplay rather than a classic pun, you're going to definitely stop and read each one and groan and, you know, laugh and shake your head and throw something at the television.
Nice.
The process of solving the puzzles in this one is actually one of the most straightforward in all of the Paugi realm, apart from, you know, just basic word search. That is to say, you get a, you basically get a cross section of two words, you know, think like a crossword puzzle where, you know, two lines intersect. And the letters are already filled out. The only thing that you have to do is pick of four letters, the letter that will best, the only letter of the set that will create a word out of both incomplete words that are linked by one letter. So, you know, you have like B blank A S T. So, you know, the four letters might be E for beast or O for boast. And then the letter that crosses it, you know, will give you the clue as to which one it is, because either only E or O will work. Only one of those will work for both words. And so once you pick it, then it just moves on to the next word. And if you get it wrong, then the worst thing in the world happens. They just say you're wrong and you just do it again. There's no penalties in this game whatsoever. They just put a little red line through it. They're like, nope, it's not that one.
Try again.
Yeah. It's a low stakes game, this. And so anyway, yeah, so they have you solve enough puzzles to get enough letters. So each letter that is the correct answer will then get added to a list of letters. And then there will be a clue at the end that tells you, you know, it's usually a joke clue, like a, like it'll say sunblock, and then it'll say seven letters. And then, you know, at the end of it, you have like seven letters that were each of the correct answers, and you have to unscramble them in order to get the correct word. In the case of sunblock, seven letters, it's eclipse. So, you know, that's a, yeah, it's clever. And then, of course, they come in with a sun-based or eclipse-based pun, which I can't remember any of them off the top of my head. But that I'm not going to spoil that for you, because you have to get the game to...
Yeah, they're the rewards.
It's the reward, so you go get those yourself. And there's literally nothing else to say about it besides that it just repeats at, you know, until you're done with all the puzzles.
So, $8, 200 puzzles, what do you say?
Well, I mean, obviously, I always say Paugi games are worth it, and this is no exception. This one's a little quicker than most. Honestly, I'd say the only true challenge is unscrambling some of the words, because the clues aren't obvious. Like I said, you know, sunblock for eclipse, that's one of the easier ones. Sometimes they're pretty... a little out there, but they always make sense in the end. And, you know, unscrambling, you know, doing anagrams is actually, you know, more of a challenge to me than just picking, you know, picking four letters, because you can just think in your head, like, okay, well, what's that spelling? There's no time limit to any of this, so yeah. It's very relaxed. Now, I will say as well that... you actually get, this is a great one for trophy hunters, because you get a trophy for every letter that is used.
Interesting.
Yeah, every time you use a letter in the game, a different letter out of the alphabet, it gives you a trophy that says, give me an A, give me a B, you know, like a Wheel of Fortune. And I actually got one for getting an answer wrong that was still a real word. That is to say, I unscrambled the letters and got a real word, but it wasn't the word that they wanted.
Interesting.
I'll let the audience guess what I put, but the correct answer was spine. Anyway, so that's a joke for people to figure out while I conclude that, yes, this is a good game. I don't know if that, you know, the six in one game is available on PS4. I know it's available on Switch. But, you know, personally, I wouldn't have bought this just because I already have it on the 6-in-1 collection. And as far as I know, I don't know that there's any difference in the amount of puzzles or what the puzzles are. It seems to just be that part of the collection. So, But I think the other set was like more expensive or something. I don't even remember.
That was eons ago.
I know. It's hard to know with Paugi because they release so many things.
But they're all quality.
Yeah, no, it is all quality. I'm just saying, if you already have the collection, then this, you might already have this game, is all I'm saying. But on its own, based on its own merit, this is just another fun, you know, word scramble style late game, and I did enjoy it. And, you know, $7.99 is the general price for a PAUGI game, so I would say definitely worth it.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yep.
Well, that is it for this episode. It is another successful episode in the books, if you could call it successful.
Can we call them books?
Sure.
Can we? Should we call them ancient scrolls?
Another ancient scroll in the books.
Another prophecy enters the ancient scrolls.
As foretold in prophecy, we shall end with music.
Oh, boy.
I don't know what kind of music, but I'll play something.
Yeah, figure it out.
Yeah, I'll figure it out. Chris, do you have any final words?
Just that I hope everyone's having a good time and, you know, say hi to your friends and that you love them.
Yeah, that's especially after this week.
Yeah, for sure. And I love all of you. I can't wait to talk to you all again.
Decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody will be treated all the same. There will be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around. The hairs on your arm will stand up at the terror in each sip, in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup, or disappear into the potter's ground? When the day comes around. Hear the trumpets, hear the thunders. 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching with a big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born, some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in authority. Perjury's long tenuous. The whirlwind is in authority. Time. Off again. No shalom, no shalom. Then the father hen will call his chickens home. The wise man will bow down before the throne. And at his feet they'll cast their golden crowns. When they come around, whoever is unjust, then hit the unjust still. Whoever righteous, let him be righteous still. Whoever is filthy, let him be filthy still. Listen to the words all written down. Hear the trumpets, hear the thunders. 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching. It's a big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born, some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in authority. Virgins long. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts, and I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and Hell followed with him.